The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As scandals mount up and we count up crimes we see accumulate, here's my suggestion, ask the question we first heard in Watergate. What did the president know and when did he know it? If nothing he did was impure, he sure doesn't show it. Each time he opens his mouth, no doubt that he'll blow it.
Uh-huh.
Every day there's another lie. False accusations about the FBI. Slurs about media he's repeating. And baseless conspiracies he keeps tweeting. What did the president know about foreign power? More details keep coming out. Now it seems every hour. Is there anybody they didn't meet in Trump Tower? His shady aides could have used more vetting. Brushes with Russians they kept forgetting. If those meetings were routine and not a big item, why are they trying so hard to hide them? What kind of help did Trump get and from whom did he get it? Even Republicans who've seen the evidence have said it. There were good reasons for an informant to be embedded. Trying to discredit and discolor the very legitimacy of Mr. Mueller. If Trump's innocent of the charges being built, he ought to stop acting so friggin' guilty. The president's afraid of the truth and trying to slow it. As we've seen in history of not so long ago, it is the cover-up that's worse than the crime, and time's gonna show it. What did the president know? This scandal just continues to grow. What did the president know? Pretty soon it's all gonna blow. What did the president know? And when did he know it?
Oh, the latest from Lauren Mayer, attempting to start off this Friday program with a little bit of levity at Dump's expense, as it should be. Welcome to Friday, and thank you, Lauren Mayer. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com at 3 p.m. on the East Coast. We are repeated on the Progressive Voices Network, Tuesday through Fridays at 6 p.m. Eastern. And thank you for being here, however you listen. Of course, the podcast is always available anytime, always free of charge, because I won't put the show behind a paywall. But your donations are what keep us afloat. Seriously, the show is 100% listener supported. And I, as I say at the end of every What's News episode, I can't do it without your help. So if you're in a position to help out, please visit NicoleSandler.com/donate and give what you can. This is a really rough time in America. I was debating on how I deal with the beginning of today's show because there's sad news. And I don't know why I've been affected so strongly, and maybe because it's there were two high-profile suicides in a week. And as one who suffers from depression, I'd be lying if I said that the thought never crossed my mind. But you see what suicide does to the people that are left behind, and it's devastating. And that's why I think I could never do it. I was on Twitter a lot this morning. Somebody named Cassie St. Onge tweeted, "So many messages telling those who are struggling to reach out." Fair enough, but part of what depression does is mutes your ability to reach. If you are not depressed and you see someone struggling, you reach out. If you don't see someone who used to be around, you reach out. I know how easy it is to just isolate when you get depressed. So the news, in case you hadn't heard, Anthony Bourdain of CNN committed suicide. He was found this morning in a hotel room in France, where he was filming the next season of, what's it called, Places Unknown. It's so sad. And it goes with today's news. The House Budget Dems tweeted, "This is sabotage, period, by refusing to defend key provisions of the Affordable Care Act, including protections for pre-existing conditions. The Trump administration is making it clear they're committed to destroying the health security of American families." And whoever runs the Alt-US Press Secretary account retweeted that along with this. "This would exclude 130 million Americans from the healthcare system, including those who seek treatment for depression. Today of all days, why would the Republicans do this?" So I can't speak to why Anthony Bourdain or Kate Spade committed suicide. I have no idea. I don't know. All I know is that some of us, I think we all have our own personal demons. Some of us deal with them in harsher ways than others. I can't speak to
hold on.
Why
I have the wrong
Anthony
window
Bourdain
open. Close
Kate
this.
Spade committed suicide.
Why can't I mute
no
this?
Idea.
Hold that. Okay, here we go. Mute site.
I honestly, I don't know what the answer is, because there is no answer. I just know in here from a story, let me scroll down and I'll pull it out because this really should be the lead story today. "The Trump administration delivers another blow to those of us who depend on the Affordable Care Act to be able to buy health insurance. In a brief filed Thursday night in a Texas federal court." Sorry, it's going to be one of those days where I think I break down. "The Justice Department said that key parts of the Affordable Care Act should be invalidated. The individual mandate is unconstitutional, and it would not defend the Affordable Care Act against the latest challenge to its constitutionality. The provisions, DOJ says should be invalidated are central to the Affordable Care Act and would gut protections for those with pre-existing conditions. These provisions are guaranteed issue, which requires insurers to offer coverage to everyone regardless of their medical history. Now, prior to the Affordable Care Act, insurers often rejected applicants who were ill or who had pre-existing conditions or only offered them limited coverage. Under another provision, the community rating provision, insurers were not allowed to set premiums based on a person's health histories." And so here we go. We're going back to the past where, there goes the thunder. It's one of those days. To quote Alan Grayson, you know, the Republican health care plan is don't get sick. And if you do get sick, die quickly. This is where we're headed. Now, the Affordable Care Act was far from perfect, but it did keep many of us alive. If not for the Affordable Care Act, I wouldn't have made it through lung cancer. I wouldn't still be treated for depression.
And in case you can't tell, I am being treated for depression. But if these cuts go through, then I won't be. I remember I've dealt with depression since adolescence. And I remember when I first went out on my own, being able to get health insurance, but mental health was precluded from my coverage. I couldn't get any coverage for mental health care because I had already had mental health care. You remember those days? This is where Dump wants to take us back to. They say that, what do they say? They say that there's a spike in suicides following a high profile suicide. We've had two this week. No, doesn't pretend very well for what's going on. But, you know, they say after Robin Williams committed suicide, the number upticked. This is a time when people need help, not a time to cut services. All right, let's go to the phones. Hi, who's this?
This is Jason in Simi Valley.
Hey, Jason.
I am, well, first off, today I was going to call you up and give you a hard time about a couple of things you said yesterday, but I think I'll skip over that at the moment. Because, girl, you and I are in the same boat.
Yeah.
I couldn't get health insurance before they put in the ACA.
Yep.
Couldn't do it. Today, over the last 5 years, I've been able to get healthier, and I'm owner of a company, and this thing matters incredibly much to me because I'd like to keep getting my medicines and medical treatment and not go back to the days where they basically said, oh, we're not going to insure you, die. And I think, I hate to say it, I know this is going to sound hideous, but sometimes people have got to be reminded about how wonderful it was and how our wonderful government, led by Cittadini, is doing everything in their power to bend us over, and they're not even spitting on it, okay? So right now, let's just face it. The health care thing, they don't care. Not one of them cares. I'm sure many of your Republican representatives in Florida certainly don't. I'm sure the water boy, otherwise known as Marco Rubio, doesn't give a good goddamn if we die. They don't. And if we don't elect people who do care, that's that. Now, I don't care right now, unless they're really horrible, if anybody's got a D by their name, will get my vote. If they have a D by my name and they're a woman, I'm going to give them the vote.
Yep.
Okay. Debbie Wasserman Schultz might be an exception to that. But I'm not in that state. I'm out
right
here in California, and we have Devin Nunes and a wonderful representative, Steve Knight. But the point basically being is that these people are doing things which are so tone deaf. They don't understand what this has done. And to be honest with you, I don't want you going into the weekend crying and being depressed. It is vastly better for your psyche, I think, to get angry. Because these people, I think, in my heart of hearts, there's a special place in the ninth circle of hell for the lot of them. And I listen to your show, and I enjoy it some days less than others. But I listen. And I support what you do, and I know where you're at. Believe me, you are far from the only one. And the people who are leading this charge, to take a quote from a wonderful movie you may have seen, Scent of a Woman, I can take a flamethrower to this place with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm joking, of course. I mean, I'm not. But, I mean, the point basically being is we are seeing a segment of our country who have been brainwashed by Fox News and everything else who don't understand they're cutting their own throats from ear to ear. And it's up to us to stay and stand our ground. And I want you to know that you're doing a good job. I wish you had time to reach out and maybe network with some of the other shows so you could reach a wider audience, because I would like to see that. I know that one of your former partners, I've suggested that of her, but she just says buy a stinking podcast.
Yes.
That's just me.
Uh-huh.
But I want you. I did want to call up and just really tell you, I like what you do. We will not let this scum do this to us again. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you.
I listen to you every day. It's hard to listen to you live, I grant you, but I managed to do it.
Well, thank
and
you.
And live is the operative word. So I think right now, I think you need everybody else who's listening to you has got to understand, you're down now. You're fighting this demon in you, which I use that euphemistically. And I'm telling you right now, there's an old saying I picked up from an old TV show, and I remember this. Don't gamble if you don't have to gamble, but if you do have to gamble, go for broke. And every time I see Cittadini on television, I at least fight the urge to throw something at it.
I hear you.
But this healthcare thing, do they not understand or they just don't care that people will die?
I think they don't care. They just want to undo what Obama put in place.
You know what? As much as I know you were critical of Obama, but I hate to say this. Where are the time travelers going back in time to prevent this catastrophe right now? That's all I'm asking. They should have popped up there, and suggested to Fred Trump he use a condom that day. But there's a fun thought. But nevertheless, we'll get through this. We will. It may not be pretty. It may be hard. But we'll get through it. And I want you to remember that no matter how down it seems, just remember, worst case scenario, if you really get depressed, there is two fairly certain solutions for you. Pull out the DVD or download it or stream it. Watch Young Frankenstein or High Anxiety or actually Blazing Saddles. And if that doesn't cheer you up, nothing will.
Yeah.
But it will cheer you up.
Yeah.
There's nothing quite as much fun as hearing Frau Blücher.
That's true.
So you're going to take care of yourself?
Yes.
All right. Now, cheer up. And just remember, at least you don't look like an orange Cheeto.
Well, there's that. Got that going.
You see?
Yep.
There it is. So as one of your loyal fans, you have a good weekend. You take care of yourself. I'll be back on Tuesday. And then I may give you crap about some of the stuff you said yesterday, but not today.
Sounds good. All right,
bye-bye.
Jason. Thanks for the call. Bye. All right. Well, let's, you know what? Let's get into the rest of the news while we still can. By the way, Digby's coming up today. So no crying when Digby's around. Okay. All right. Oh, here's what's news. Here we go.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, there is breaking news to start us off from the New York Times, who's reporting that the special counsel Robert Mueller brought new obstruction charges today against Trump's former campaign chairman Paul Manafort and added allegations against a close associate, Konstantin Kilmenik, who prosecutors suspect has ties to Russian intelligence. Go figure. Prosecutors said obstruction charges relate to Manafort's efforts to coach the stories of witnesses against him. Manafort remains charged with money laundering, illegal foreign lobbying, and lying to federal officials. As Trump was departing the White House for the G7 summit in Quebec this morning, he stopped to talk with the press for a while. Trump called for Russia to be reinstated into the group of the world's largest economies from which it was removed in 2014 after its forced annexation of Crimea away from Ukraine.
It doesn't matter what you call it. It used to be the G8 because Russia was in it, and now Russia's not in it. Now, I love our country.
No, you don't.
I have been Russia's worst nightmare.
No, you haven't.
If Hillary got in, I think Putin is
probably
gone mad.
Oh, shut up already.
I wish Hillary won, because you see what I do. But
yeah, I see what you do.
With that being said, Russia should be in this meeting. Why are we having a meeting without Russia?
Lots of reasons, you moron.
I would recommend, and it's up to them, but Russia should be in the meeting. It should be a part of it. You know, whether you like it or not, and it may not be politically correct, but we have a world to run. And in the G7, which used to be the G8, they threw Russia out.
For good reason.
They should let Russia come back in, because we should have Russia at the negotiating table.
Oh, God. Well, reaction to Trump's unexpected comments was strong from both sides of the aisle. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Trump was turning U.S. foreign policy, quote, into an international joke, doing lasting damage to our country.
Republican Senator Ben Sasse said, quote, Putin is not our friend and he is not the president's buddy. He is a thug using Soviet-style aggression to wage a shadow war against America, and our leaders should act like it. John McCain, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, released this statement. Ready? Quote, Vladimir Putin chose to make Russia unworthy of membership in the G8 by invading Ukraine and annexing Crimea. Nothing he has done since then has changed that most obvious fact. Every day, Russian-led separatist forces are killing Ukrainians in the Donbass. Every day, Putin's forces are helping the Assad regime slaughter the Syrian people. And every day, through assassinations, cyber attacks, and malign influence, Russia is assaulting democratic institutions all over the world. The president has inexplicably shown our adversaries the deference and esteem that should be reserved for our closest allies. Those nations that share our values and have sacrificed alongside us for decades are being treated with contempt. This is the antithesis of so-called principled realism and a sure path to diminishing America's leadership in the world. My God, this man is just destroying the country. Sorry, as I regain my composure again. French President Emmanuel Macron on Thursday threatened to join with other world leaders to issue a rare rebuke of the U.S. at the G7 summit. Macron threatened to exclude the U.S. from the joint statement issued every year at the end of the summit. He tweeted yesterday, the American president may not mind being isolated, but neither do we mind signing a six-country agreement if need be, because these six countries represent values. They represent an economic market which has the weight of history behind it and which is now a true international force. Trump was supposed to have had a meeting with Macron this morning, a meeting that was postponed, with the White House allegedly hoping to reschedule it later in the day. As Trump has been attacking France and other U.S. allies over their trade policy. Canada's prime minister pushed back this morning.
The American administration has made a decision today that we deplore and obviously is going to lead to retaliatory measures, as it must, but we regret that. We would much rather move together in partnership, understanding that no two countries have economies as interwoven and mutually beneficial as Canada and the United States.
That was, again, Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau yesterday speaking about the need for retaliation. Trump actually pushed back on all of that this morning.
We're going to deal with the unfair trade practices. If you look at what Canada, Mexico, the European Union, all of them have been doing to us for many, many decades, we have to change it. And they understand it's going to happen.
What are you going to do if they form an agreement without you?
We are going to do very well. Now,
sure you are.
If we're unable to make a deal, we'll terminate NAFTA. We'll have a better deal. If we are unable to make a deal, we will be better off. Right now, we are not going to live with the deals the way they are. European Union treats us very unfairly. Canada, very unfairly. Mexico, very unfairly. With that being said, I think we'll probably very easily make a deal.
Isn't he what they call a snowflake? And to make matters worse, Trump will depart the G7 summit early, leaving Quebec tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m. before the scheduled sessions on gender equality and women's empowerment figures, climate change and clean energy, and oceans. Go figure. Instead, he'll head directly to Singapore, the site of his June 12th meeting with the North Korean leader. On Thursday, to make matters even more absurd, Trump said that attitude is more important than preparation as he looks to negotiate an accord with Kim Jong-un to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula.
I think I'm very well prepared. I don't think I have to prepare very much. It's about attitude. It's about willingness to get things done. But I think I've been preparing for the summit for a long time, as has the other side. I think they've been preparing for a long time also. So this isn't a question of preparation. It's a question of whether or not people want it to happen. And we'll know that very quickly.
Is he kidding? This morning, while speaking to the press before he, as he was making his way to the helicopter, Trump declared it was fake news that said he didn't have to prepare.
He's been preparing his whole life. Now, you heard what he just said. Here he is this morning saying, I didn't say that.
I didn't say that. I said I've been preparing all my life. I always believe in preparation, but I've been preparing all my life. You know, these one-week preparations, they don't work. Just ask Hillary what happened to her in the debates. So I've been preparing for this all my life. And frankly, it's really just the fake news, because if you run, Peter, just a little bit longer, the clip, you would see I've really been preparing all my life. I said that, but of course, you know, the news doesn't pick that up.
Because oh, God.
It's fake news.
It's fake news. It's fake news. You heard what I said, and now I'm telling you I didn't say it. And if you think I did say it, it's fake news because I'm an asshole. Oh, my God. The only bigger asshole this week is his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani in Tel Aviv, ostensibly the president's personal attorney, thought it was his place to weigh in on foreign affairs.
Well, Kim Jong-un got back on his hands and knees and begged for it, which is exactly the position you want to put him in. Everyone said, well, if you get tough on China on trade, China's not going to help you with North Korea. Well, somehow, North Korea, after he canceled the summit because they insulted the vice president, they insulted his national security advisor, and they also said they were going to go to nuclear war against us. They were going to defeat us in a nuclear war. We said, well, we're not going to have a summit under those circumstances. Well, Kim Jong-un got back on his hands and knees and begged for it, which is exactly the position you want to put him in. Oh. That's what has to happen with the Palestinian Authority. They have to be seeking peace. You got to change the dynamic and put the pressure on them.
Says the man who wanted to be Secretary of State. Well, if you were thinking, what an ass, you're not alone. The guy who is Secretary of State, who you thought couldn't possibly be worse than this guy, isn't. Mike Pompeo had a message for Rudy, too.
I know Rudy. Rudy doesn't speak for the administration when it comes to this negotiation and this set of issues.
Yeah, no, he doesn't speak for any of us. And I guess he's only speaking for Dump because he's doing the job for free. There's more breaking news today. The former director of security for the Senate Intelligence Committee, James Wolf, was charged yesterday with lying to the FBI about his repeated contacts with three reporters and about his giving non-public information to two reporters about Senate Intelligence Committee business. In other words, they seem to have caught a leaker. Prosecutors also secretly seized years' worth of a New York Times reporter's phone and email records. Wolf's case led to the first known instance of the Justice Department going after a reporter's data under the Trump administration, although they did it fairly routinely under the Obama administration. Trump was asked about that this morning as well.
It's very interesting that they caught a leaker, and it's a very important leaker. So it's very interesting. I'm getting information on it now. Happened last night. It could be a terrific thing. I know I believe strongly in freedom of the press.
I'm a big
believer in freedom of the press. But I'm also a believer in classified information. It has to remain classified. And that includes Comey and his band of thieves who leak classified information all over the place. I'm a very big believer in freedom of the press, but I'm also a believer that you cannot leak classified information.
Oh, God, he's infuriating. Yeah, it's very interesting that he claims to be a supporter of freedom of the press. We'll leave that right there. And as we started the show, in sad news, Anthony Bourdain, a famous chef and host of CNN's Parts Unknown, was found dead of an apparent suicide this morning in a hotel room in France. Bourdain's suicide comes less than a week after designer Kate Spade took her own life. So now is a good time to remind everyone that there's always help available. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is at 1-800-273-TALK. It's 1-800-273-8255. It's a good thing to put that on social media every now and again and share it with those who might need it. All right, we'll take a quick time out and come back on the other side with Digby, who always makes me feel better because she's Digby. So stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Hello.
Digby.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's a rough day. It's, first of all, it's a gray day. It's storming here in South Florida, and then
God.
Yeah, and then the news of the suicide of Anthony Bourdain. It's just shocking, you know. And this comes on the day when the Trump administration says they are not going to defend the provisions within the Affordable Care Act.
I know. I don't even, you know, where do you start with this? I mean, first, just a word about Bourdain, you know. I mean, I mm-hmm. think, you know, I watched his show for years. I mean, when he was on the Travel Channel, too, and going back, and I've read his books, too. And the thing that was most, you know, I like to cook. It's one of my hobbies, so I was interested in it for the food. That's uh-huh. part of it. I'm a bit of a foodie, but... mostly it was because of his cultural commentary and the fact that he was one of the few Americans I see these days, you know, at least represented in media and popular culture, who presents the world as just, a bunch of people. You know, we're all people, we're all human, our common humanity, and he would go everywhere in the world, no matter where it was, and find that kind of common thread, which is not that hard to find. You know, it really isn't. People all, you know, the world over want the same thing. We're all, you know, looking for love and security and, you know, and creativity and, you know, the normal human ambitions. And he was able to kind of touch on that wherever he went. They all related to him. You know, you notice on his show that, you know, everybody was always kind of, they were laughing and having a good time, and he put it around food, which is always a nice common, you know, thing that we can all share. But it was deeper than that, and he was one of the few people on TV who was able to do that, and I think really represent that side of our culture and world culture in a time when everybody's just kind of squeezing into these cramped nationalistic identities, and instead of seeing us all, you know, the family of man, to you know, use a cliche. So I think he's going to be missed. I was really sorry to hear it, and I had no idea that he had, you know, any kind of unhappiness or depression or
right.
suicidal tendencies, that, you know, that was not evident certainly in his sort of joie de vivre that he seemed to express on his show. And, you know, it's a sad day. I do feel bad about it.
It really is sad. And coming, you know, less than a week after Kate Spade. Now, I have no connection with Kate Spade, but when you have two high profile personalities, successful people who seemingly, you know, have the world at their doorstep, commit suicide, it does something to you. It does something to me anyway.
Yeah, and it also does show that, you know, money, success, fame, all that stuff, you know, it's not everything.
No.
And that's something we should keep in mind as we look even, you know, at politics and how we view our culture and our government and how we, you know, there's a sort of a movement, I think, and certainly it's on the left and on the right, on both sides, to sort of see everything in economic deterministic terms, and I think that's a mistake. You know, the human experience is much deeper than that, and no amount of money, no amount of you know, fame or success in that way can guarantee a person's happiness.
That's
so
true.
We need to think beyond money. You know, we need to think about other things as well.
Although lack of money can make things really bad.
Of course. No kidding.
So here we have Donald Trump left today, headed off to Quebec for the G7, where he's basically going to blow up all our best alliances and call for Russia to be brought back into this group. Against seemingly everybody. It's like he just pulls these things out of thin air. Like he doesn't consult with any experts. Are experts totally, is this administration devoid of real, like, foreign policy experts?
Well, I mean, they have them, but they're just kind of the wrong kind. And Trump also, it wouldn't even matter. Even if he had the greatest array of experts in the world and they were all laying it out for him and giving him a full array of options and you know, educating him, attempting to educate him deeply on these issues, he would not listen. He said this before, and in fact, I quoted it in my piece today for Salon. He said during the campaign that he does not believe that he needs to learn anything that he doesn't already know. He said it in those words. I know everything I need to know already.
Yeah, he said he's been preparing.
And I have common sense.
He's been preparing for this his entire life. What the fuck does that mean?
It means that, you know, he knows everything, and he knows all he needs to know, and he's a very stable genius. We know
this.
Yes. Look, I mean, we know, you and I both know what this is really about. He can't learn. It's not that he doesn't want to or that he doesn't think he needs to. It's that he can't. He's incapable of any kind of intellectual evolution. And this is obvious in fact, the trade war is a perfect example of this. Trump has been saying exactly the same things about certain issues for decades. One of them is criminal justice, right? Big believer in the death penalty, mm-hmm. thinks people should be thrown in jail forever. Very hardcore authoritarian views. We know that. And trade is another one of those issues. And he has misunderstood it from the very beginning. It's this very kind of playground kindergarten view of trade where he thinks that if we sell cars to France, say, you know, just example, mm-hmm. they should be required to sell cars to us. I mean, this is how he sees trade, and he sees these deficits, you know, a trade deficit with a certain country as being a sign that, you know, the United States is being taken to the cleaners. You know, so mm-hmm. they're laughing at us. They're treating us unfairly. And, you know, he whines about fairness all the time.
Yep.
Because he really does not understand the complexity of the trading system that the world created after World War II, right? Now, that's not to say that there is not unfairness in the trading system or that many of the institutions that we have created or the trade deals, the multilateral trade deals that we did, have not, you know, don't need to be restructured or maybe even thrown out. I mean, that's not something that's beyond, but you can't do it this way. You can't
right.
just throw it out or declare a trade war against our closest allies. I mean, one of the reasons after World War II that they created this trading, you know, organizations that we have, and it was in order to prevent wars, actual shooting wars. Because this is how, one way they start, is that you get into these, you know, these kind of disputes, and everything becomes very charged up. And, you know, this, again, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, money really does make a difference. I mean, if people are starting, if people get screwed financially, they get angry. And, of course, this is where Trump is going to blame foreigners for it, right, even though it's him who's doing it. This can escalate. It can escalate in really bad ways, or it can bring people together that you don't want to be together, right? I mean,
yep.
you don't want certain alliances outside of our alliances to sort of come together and work together. So there were reasons for this beyond just the actual, you know, trading of goods and services. It was to create some systems and organizations to prevent something, you know, like World War II from happening again. And here's Donald Trump just, you know, he's a total blunderbuss, just kind of throwing, you know, and it's because he's had this idea in his head for decades that, you know, the U.S. is getting laughed at, we're being paid, you know, we're being disrespected. And I honestly think, Nicole, that this is him projecting his own personal, you know, kind of you know, psychological interpretation about himself. Mm-hmm. He's being laughed at. He knows he is. People are laughing at him. And somehow or another, it's, again, you know, l'état c'est moi, right? He is the state. And he's extrapolated from that that the United States is being laughed at. And his entire worldview is sort of based on this twisted psychology that he has. This is a very dangerous time for him to be doing this. I mean, it really is not good because, you know, after the Cold War, over the last 20 years, you know, things have been shifting anyway, right? I mean, the world order has been in flux. And we've had some very bad, you know, we had some U.S. presidents make some very bad decisions, you know, George Bush, cough, cough,
yeah.
And, you know, doing some very bad things over the past decade, you know. And Obama, for all his faults, in this area, worked very hard to repair those relationships and try to bring things back into some kind of a, you know, just a predictable order, right, where people kind of knew where everyone was coming from. And along comes Trump, and he's just blowing the whole thing up. And we don't have any idea where it's going to go. We really don't. And, you know, whether or not he is in cahoots with Russia, you know, time will tell. We'll find out whatever that story is. But if he isn't, the way he's talking and acting over and over and over again makes him the stupidest person on earth. So either yeah. way, you know, it's bad. It's bad either way you look at it.
You know, he talks about other countries laughing at us. I mean, what does he think they're doing now? Does he think they're all like, shaking from fear of our dear leader?
I think so.
Wow.
Don't you think? That's what
yeah.
that's how he looks at this?
Yeah.
That he's. I mean, he really believes that he brought Kim Jong-un to the table by tweeting Little Rocket Man.
Oh.
Honestly, I believe he believes that's true. Now, we know the real truth here is that Kim Jong-un now has managed over the course of time to, you know, North Korea, his father before him and now him, to build a nuclear weapon and build a ballistic missile capable of carrying it to a foreign land. That's what he was. Once he did that, then, you know, he's in a position now to, you know, be a player on the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nuclear country, right?
Yeah.
So that has nothing to do with Trump.
Right.
And in fact, Kim understood something about Trump much more than, you know, Trump understands about himself, which was that he escalated the argument and then de-escalated it to give Trump the feeling that he'd done something. And then, you know, I don't think Kim thought that Trump would accept the invitation to the summit. That was a surprise
right.
to everybody.
Yep.
But it certainly played into his plan. And, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, we're going to have to see, you know, my suspicion is that it's going to be a big pageant, and we're going to see a lot of photo ops, and Trump's going to stomp around, say, you know, showing that he's, you know, bringing world peace. It won't be anything more than some kind of, you know, I mean, and a delaying tactic is good, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter what, it's better than a crisis with North
yes,
Korea. So, you know, I'm not going to argue with that. But Kim gets what he wants, which is now he's a world player. Trump gets to stomp around and pretend like he did something. Nothing's changed. North Korea is a nuclear power now, and it will stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we carry on. You know, all we can hope is that they don't decide to give Trump the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? I don't think he's going to negotiate peace, so I don't see how they could do it. But then again,
no.
They gave it to Obama, and he didn't deserve it either.
Right. Right. And that's exactly right. I mean, and that's really what that whole thing is about, right? I mean, Trump just wants, and it was ridiculous. You know, I mean, I agree with you. I was astonished that they did it at the time. But at least to Obama's credit, he didn't, you know, he did over the course of his presidency, and much more in the second term than in the first, he did manage to repair some of America's alliances and kind of pulled back from the sort of bellicose hawkishness that was so prevalent during, you know, Cheney's reign and, you know, and Cheney and Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him credit for that. I
right.
mean, I don't think, you know, he didn't bring, you know, he's not Mahatma Gandhi and, you know, he never was, or Nelson Mandela. But, you know, he did do something in his late term. But, of course, Donald Trump has destroyed it all. I mean, just with a wave of the hand, basically, has destroyed Obama's legacy in that sense. And that, of course, is what one of the prime motivations for for Trump is to destroy Obama's legacy in every way he can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Digby is with us. You find Digby, of course, at digbysblog.blogspot.com and, of course, at salon.com. And you've been keeping up with the whole Russia thing. I know there was another indictment handed down to Manafort this morning and another one of his acolytes. I'm more, I don't know what the word is, consumed with, not obsessed with, disgusted by, terrified by the Rudy Giuliani hire as Trump's personal lawyer. What the hell is going on here?
It's like he hired Trump hired a doppelganger to go out and be even worse than him. You know, it's like he's making Trump look sane by comparison. I mean, this thing he did in Israel, I cannot get past it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a shocking thing. First of all, think about this, Nicole. This was a global economic, market forum. They paid him big money to come over there to talk about how politics were going to affect the markets, right?
Wow.
And what is he, big money. And I don't know how much it was, but it was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
I mean, this is more of the scam, right? Why is the president's lawyer going around and doing this for money in the middle of the case, right? I mean, it's insane. And shooting his mouth off. Now, I happen to believe that much of what Rudy Giuliani says is a reflection of conversations he's had with Donald Trump, because they sound like Trump, don't they? I mean, they're exactly what he sounds like.
Yep.
So this stuff, I mean, he said three big things at this Israeli conference. The first thing he said was about the Korean summit, where he said that, he had Kim Jong-un crawling on his hands and knees begging to come back to the talks. And that's the position Trump wanted to put him in.
Right.
Now, just think about that. That whole visual image of that is just so outrageous. And I have to give Kim credit. At least at this point, up to now, he hasn't reacted to that the way he did to John Bolton, for instance. So maybe he's decided, look, this is just some, loony drunk guy in Israel. I'm not gonna take the bait. I mean, maybe that's where they're at. Or he's, so committed to this at this point that he doesn't wanna rock the boat. But whatever, it was a very dangerous and stupid thing for Giuliani to say, and that he didn't make it up out of whole cloth. I am absolutely sure that he and Trump have talked about that, and that's how they saw it. That's how they viewed the whole thing, even though there's no evidence that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second thing Giuliani said, of course, that was outrageous, was that the Mueller investigation that the special prosecutor's office is trying to frame Donald Trump. I mean, a frame-up is something, right? I mean, that is really, and they've already, claimed that the FBI was trying to frame Trump during the campaign.
Right.
But now they're going to another level there, where they're saying that Robert Mueller and the special prosecutor are in on the frame-up. And I think that is new, and I think that is where they're going. And, of course, all of this is in service of giving Donald Trump an excuse not to be interviewed by the special prosecutor. So I suspect I don't think that was an accident either. And then, of course, there was the disgusting, absolutely revolting stuff he said about Stormy Daniels.
Yep.
And you and I both know that that's exactly the kind of discussion he and Trump have had about, women in general. In fact, they've had it in public.
Yep.
And going on and on about how she doesn't deserve any respect. I respect criminals, but I don't respect a porn star. It's like, wow. So, basically he's saying that she's an animal just like the immigrants are, right? I mean, everybody's an animal to these people. They're not. I respect every person, even criminals, but I don't respect a porn star. So she's not a person. And it was disgusting. And there were women, the two interviewers at this talk in Israel were women, and they actually interrupted him and said, "Now you must respect her," they said, "and don't disrespect women." And he just went on.
Yeah,
he just talked right over them and kept doing it. And Trump this morning, as he was on his way, yammering out in the at the White House lawn before he got on the helicopter. They asked him about it, and he said, "Well, I don't really disagree with Rudy on that." Huh? And gave a smug smile. you know, I love Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer. They asked him about it, and his response was Rudolph Giuliani is a pig. Mm-hmm. And then later he goes, I just want to issue an apology to the pig that I compared Rudy Giuliani to.
Well, and Trump is one as well. And, you know, I know you have it up at Hullabaloo. You got one picture of a naked Melania Trump on the cover of GQ magazine. There's a lot worse than that now making the rounds again because he asked for it.
Right. He did ask for it. And look, the truth is, you know, I don't care that Melania posed nude. I mean, that's fine with me. She's, you know, she had a right to make a living however she chose, and it's perfectly respectable.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Stormy Daniels. You know, I mean, look, the fact that Stormy Daniels is an adult film star and director, by the way, you know, entrepreneur, doing all these things, the fact that she's, it has nothing to do with you know, the case at hand or her credibility. This idea that, you know, certain women don't have any credibility because they're whores, whether professionally or not, that was what Rudy Giuliani was saying. And my answer to that is, well, okay, what do we say about former prosecutors and mayors who sell their souls to cretinous morons who grab women by the crotch? I mean, how about that? You know, I mean, what do we call them? Do they have any credibility? Because to me, Stormy Daniels is a far, far more honest, respectable human being in every way than Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump.
No kidding. I mean, and between the two of them, they've had six wives. I mean, Rudy Giuliani is even sleazier than Donald Trump in that he had he was mayor of New York. He was living in Gracie Mansion with his wife while his mistress was holed up elsewhere. And he held a press conference to let his wife know that she was being evicted. They were getting divorced and he was moving his mistress into Gracie Mansion. I mean, the man is a slime ball.
Yeah, real class act, right? I mean, real class act. And by the way, you know, at the end of I wrote about this for Salon. At the end of it, there's this footage of Rudy after, you know, he gave this talk in Israel at some restaurant in Tel Aviv, dancing to electronic dance music with, you know, waving a napkin over his head with about five girls dancing around him. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, I guess he and his wife would just split up, so I guess maybe that's okay now, you know, for him to be doing this stuff. But it's clear, you know, I actually think Rudy, I mean, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this in public, but, I mean, could it be tippling a little bit? Because, you know, something, I don't know what, but he just seems a little bit like he's having too much fun.
Yeah, well, have you heard his cackles? I mean, they used to make fun of Hillary Clinton's laugh. Have you heard Rudy cackle? I wish I had one of them pulled here. He laughs. He is asked a question, a serious question by an interviewer, and he with that face.
I know. Really inappropriate, isn't
it?
It's
it
a
really
strangely
is.
Inappropriate reaction.
Yep.
And I don't know what that's about, but I mean, it's like this, you know, he's not behaving normally, even by Rudy Giuliani standards. I mean, he's always been an ass, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, going way back. But I mean, this performance of his is to me, it's bizarre. And yet Trump, you know, stood by him today. They asked him about it and he said, oh, Rudy's just Rudy and he's doing a great job. You know, I mean, he has no intention of pulling him back. And he didn't even pull him back on the Kim Jong-un stuff, which I found surprising. And perhaps what we're seeing there is some kind of Trump-Rudy, you know, good Trump, bad Trump game that they're playing, right? You know, where Rudy's saying this stuff, hoping that it does get back just to remind Kim who's boss. Because Rudy's entire you know, motivation for saying that. And he said it explicitly. He didn't, you know, he said that's the position Trump wanted to put him in. Asked about it later, he didn't back off. And what he said was, Kim needs to, you know, Trump is the stronger of the two and Kim needs to know that.
Oh, my God.
And Kim Jong-un needs to know that. You know, so maybe this is a plan. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Trump, you know, this is the kind of thing he would do on the sly and not tell anybody.
Right. Well, Mike Pompeo did say Rudy doesn't speak. Here's what he said. Here's the clip. I think. Hold on.
I know Rudy. Rudy doesn't speak for the administration when it comes to this negotiation and this set of issues.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if he's actually sure about that. You know, I mean, maybe he doesn't speak for the administration, but he might be speaking for his client. And why in the hell is Rudy Giuliani talking about this at all?
At all.
He's not in the administration. He's not a foreign policy person. He's supposedly defending the president in the Russia investigation. I don't even, you know, what in the world? I mean, but he feels perfectly free to spout off whenever he wants, and Trump does not say anything about it. So everybody keeps saying, oh, you know, Rudy's not long for this administration. You know, I don't think because, you know, Trump has fired people in the past, like Scaramucci and others who, you know, got some bad press for what they said. But I think Rudy really channels Trump. I think that he is channeling the president in a way that nobody else has been able to do.
Great.
I think he really reflects him.
Two crazy old men who really have no clue what's going on.
No kidding. And, you know, you look at them, you know, talking about women the way that they do, and I just, you know, I want to go, guys, have you looked in the mirror lately?
Yep.
I mean, really. I mean, there was Rudy Giuliani disparaging Stormy Daniels' looks.
Right.
Now, to me, I just found that astonishing. I mean, yeah, say what you will about Stormy Daniels, but she is a beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God. And the idea that he would sit there and disparage her looks and then go on and on about how, you know, Trump's wives were, you know, beautiful women of substance.
And classy.
And all
and,
that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Really. They live in some alternate reality. But this is, it's the gaslighting of America, where they'll say something over and over again until the rest of us start thinking, are we going nuts or... You know, is the sky really green?
Well, I think one thing Trump is proving, and it's, you know, it's kind of surprising. You know, we talked about the bully pulpit a lot during the Obama administration. A lot of us, people like me, were sort of wanted Obama to speak out more, right? You
mm-hmm.
know, he had a big megaphone and a lot of people who truly respected him, and he was good at it. He was, an incredible orator who could be very, very persuasive when he wanted to be. And I remember saying that, you know, I really wish he'd speak out on this, that, or the other issue. And, you know, make a crusade of it, you know, in some way. And I was told by people over and over again, the bully pulpit doesn't exist. It makes no difference what the president says. The president doesn't have influence that way. It's all about structure and the party and blah, blah, blah. Well, I think Donald Trump is kind of proving my point. Because, granted, he's using Twitter, but he could just as easily be holding press conferences or giving speeches and have the same effect. He repeats this stuff over and over and over again until somehow, I don't know if it becomes an earworm or what happens, but you hear it and it doesn't sound so alien anymore. The most absurd thing, witch hunt, you know.
Yeah.
You hear these things and it, you know, it starts to sound like well, it, you know, the risk of using a cliched term now, it, you know, it's normalized. And that becomes a legitimate mainstream idea that's floating out there in the ether, just like, you know, and it's completely, it's the opposite of reality, right? I mean, it's some kind of a delusion, and he's completely made it up out of whole cloth, and yet people are believing it. Now, people like you and I aren't believing it because, you know, we don't, you know, we actually read and we have some sense we're clinging to reality. But there are a lot of people who are only paying marginal attention
or watch Fox News.
Yeah. Are they? Oh, well, those people are gone. I mean, they're completely gone. But even people in the middle, I think that there are some who are just kind of, I shouldn't say in the middle, but who are less engaged in politics. Say.
Right.
You just hear this stuff. You know, you're going around, you're in Starbucks, and you're standing in line, you hear people talking, and you hear this kind of conversation going. Or, you know, your relatives, you hear them talking. It's that kind of thing. It just kind of permeates the political ether. And Trump understands that. I mean, you know, he's an idiot in a million ways, but he does understand something about selling... you know, snake oil.
Yes.
And he's good at it.
That's
and
what he does.
He's selling it.
Yep.
And they're buying it.
Yep. He's expert at pushing the bullshit. and getting people to believe it, and of propping himself up and turning himself into something that he isn't, and getting people to follow him, at getting ratings. And it's frightening because this is the first TV presidency in every single way.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Yep. Digby, our time always flies too quickly when you're on. Thank you so much for being with us. You can find Digby at Digby's Hullabaloo and, of course, at Salon.com and here every now and again. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great weekend, and thanks again.